Welcome to the NFL Talking Heads Fantasy Football Podcast Show. Here are your hosts, Jeff Carrier and Seth Lull.
Hello, everyone, and welcome again to the NFL Talking Heads Fantasy Football Podcast. I am your host, Jeff Carrier. By my side is Seth Lull. Back for a weekend capping of the regular season in fantasy football. It's finally over, Seth. 13 hard, grueling weeks for everyone here. Everyone who's still listening to us after 13 weeks. Everyone who's preparing for the playoffs.
God bless them.
Yes, absolutely. I always like to go back and kind of decompress, I guess, or maybe that's not the right word. You know, I don't like to use the right word ever, but you know, in terms of this season, Seth, the 2016 season and the fantasy season, more importantly, what happened that was a surprise to you? What did you think happened that you thought would happen? And just what overall thoughts on the fantasy season that just passed us?
Well, it's unpredictable as always. You know, you and I are in two leagues together, two big leagues anyways, and I had one killer draft. I was, you know, bragging to everybody, just being really cocky that, you know, there's no point in anybody even bothering, you know, to try because I'm going to run away with the season. And then I have, in our other league, everyone was making fun of me. It was an auction draft saying that I put together, you know, a really bad team, just had a really bad draft, and that was the league that I went 9-4 in. And then the other league where I was getting all cocky, I'm going to back into the playoffs, but I had some injuries and some players that just didn't really pan out. So you never really know after draft day. You know, your team on paper may look good, it may look pretty terrible, but you know, it doesn't matter what it looks like on paper because a lot of things change. It's a fluid situation once the season starts. And I think what saved me in that league where I drafted really poorly or had a really bad auction was, you know, free agent pickups and trades. So you never know what to expect once the season starts, and things aren't always as they, you know, as they appear.
Absolutely. I mean, going in the league that you thought you had a killer draft, where you're commenting on that no one else, you know, had to compete for the rest of the year, happens to be the league that I have one of the best records in. I went 10-3 in the year and end up as a number one seed. But, you know, it's a long season, and really the overall record doesn't exactly always tell the tale of where the team is right now, right? Just like going into the playoffs. A team like maybe the Giants a couple years ago, or maybe Pittsburgh, you could say, well, yeah, they kind of got in the playoffs at 10-6 or 9-7, but you don't want to play them. Like, they're hot right now. They're on a winning streak. You don't want to play them. And I don't know how you plan for that, but I know, Seth, right now, I have three pretty decent teams, all with winning records, two at first-round buys. But I don't know if I necessarily if I'm finishing the season the way I want to finish compared to what some other teams are in the season. And to your point about pickups and trades, there was someone in our league that was 5-0, and they won one out of their next seven, and they're going to miss the playoffs. And I remember asking him a few weeks ago, well, dude, you didn't make any pickups during this season. Why weren't you more active? He said, well, I was winning all my games. So I guess just kind of to your point, you have to make sure you're continuously looking forward.
Yeah, I mean, you know, fantasy football isn't one of those set it and forget it type things. If you just draft your team and you're one of those players where you're like, okay, I'm good for the next, you know, 10-13 weeks, it doesn't matter how good your draft is, you're not going to be successful 9 times out of 10. You have to be active in free agency. You have to be actively pursuing trades. You have to make the right roster moves and start the right players based on matchups and whatnot. So that's my biggest takeaway. And I feel like, I don't know if fantasy football has always been this way, but I feel like especially if you're in leagues with other good players and it's a competitive league, you have to be good in all facets of fantasy football.
Another takeaway I have, Seth, is, and I say this a little bit more each year, I said a little bit at the beginning when we're doing a lot of our draft preparation, and that is I am going to stay away from older people even more. I don't want to draft anyone who has even the slightest chance, a higher percentage on being on the wrong side of the curve in terms of statistically players after, you know, 30 for running backs, 32, 33 for wide receivers. I don't know. I'm going to do some more research going into this offseason, but it just seems like every year this mentality or this statistical fact of these older players having trouble keeping up their production year in and year out, I'm going to pay even heavier attention to that next year. And I might make it to where I'm just going to stay away from them. Right.
Like, I think we should also add another category for points in our fantasy league: snap percentage. Like, if they have like a really good snap percentage, you get some bonus points. What do you think about that idea?
I mean, it's not a bad idea. I've heard of worse ideas from you.
Yeah. I thought you'd like that.
And I know that you're less on this, you know, well, because some players do good at the 30, some players do bad. You know, it's to you, you look at it as you win some, you lose some. But for me, statistically, I've read books on this where after a certain age, this historically they're worse. Now, yes, you have your Adrian Petersons of the world. Yes, you might have where Brandon Marshall did good at 32 but not 33. If I just made it a hard line that I'm not going to draft someone past this age, I think I'm going to win more than I lose.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you. I mean, I agree with you. I'm just not going to make it like a steadfast policy where across the board I'm not drafting anybody that's 30 or older. I think it's a case-by-case situation. But more often than not, you're going to be right. I'm going to walk away from players that are over the age of 30. You know, when you look at the top, you know, 25, 30 fantasy players, you know, they're mostly all under the age of 30 unless you're like Larry Fitzgerald, right, or Jordy Nelson. But for the most part, I agree.
Okay, here's the other thing too I want to take away, and these are just kind of coming to me.
How many takeaways you have? Jeez.
Well, it's a long season, Seth. I don't have one takeaway. I learn a lot from the season, okay? The other takeaway, and this is not really actually, this is more of a reconfirmation. One of the things that me and you harp on is take more players from better offenses. It sounds like the silliest, most common thing to say, but you always have these players, and we've had a lot of guests on to say, well, he's going to get, you know, all of the targets, even though they don't have a great offense, but they're going to get all of the targets, and you know, for that position. He's going to get all of the work. We've heard this numerous times, year in and year out. Let's do a quick exercise on all of the really bad teams, and if there are any viable fantasy starters on these teams, and how we would have fared if we would have just eliminated every single fantasy player from these teams. First is the Jets. They're 3-8.
Forte's been solid for running backs.
Yep.
Brandon Marshall hasn't lived up to his the hype at all or even close, but he's been startable. He hasn't had a good year. Fitzpatrick's been terrible. Quincy Enunwa has really cooled off. He looked like he was going to be a gem off the waiver wire early in the year, and he just kind of trailed off. So, yeah, nobody really on the Jets besides Forte.
And yep. If we include, obviously, value, you could even say, even though he is a running back, he didn't go very high, you'd say Forte was the acceptable pick there, okay?
Yep.
But numerous other bad picks, including Decker, Fitzpatrick, so on. The Browns, 0-12.
Isaiah Crowell had a good start, but besides Terrell Pryor, I'd say at this point, there's really nobody worth owning on Cleveland.
So just Terrell Pryor, and he was obviously a late-round flyer. So one person there, but obviously a number of others that were selected. The Jaguars at 2-10.
Nobody. Zero. Zip. I mean, Allen Robinson, I don't know what happened to Allen Robinson. And, you know, for the first year or two, I was off his bandwagon. You loved him. I was like, you know, I'm not buying it. Then he had that really good year. Then I get on the bandwagon, and then he does this. You know, so, you know, he has 6 touchdowns on the year, but his last 3 games, he has 3 catches or fewer. So they're just not getting him the ball. Blake Bortles is a turnover machine. Blake Bortles has had a bad year. So, yeah, I'd say nobody on the Jaguars.
Zero.
Yeah.
The Rams, 4-8.
See, the Rams, Todd Gurley is still startable for a running back. He's still serviceable. Kenny Britt's had a pretty good year. I think we can both admit that.
But if we're going to include value, really Kenny Britt is more of the acceptable selection here from the Rams as opposed to Todd Gurley. If you're selecting Todd Gurley in the top 10, he has been miserable for you all year.
Correct. He's been a bust. Yeah.
Okay. 49ers.
I mean, outside of Colin Kaepernick, who might be benched next week. I mean, he had a good stretch of games. Carlos Hyde has been serviceable at the running back position, but
when he plays,
which isn't very much. So
arguably zero people because these people are also headaches. You have to pick them up, drop them. Yep. Okay. The Bears 3-9.
Jordan Howard has been a stud, and outside of Jordan Howard, there's hasn't been any consistency because Zach Miller got injured. He was good for a few weeks.
Yep.
Alshon Jeffrey was solid but not great. Cameron Meredith had a couple good games. So really nobody, definitely no quarterbacks. You know, Cutler, Matt Barkley, Brian Hoyer. I'd say the only one has been Jordan Howard. He's actually been pretty good considering how bad the Bears have been.
Yep. So Jordan Howard definitely, and he was a waiver pickup across the board. And then the last four win, actually there's two more teams with four wins or less. Carolina Panthers at 4-8.
Yeah, they'd be the exception to the rule, I think, because Greg Olsen has been a stud.
He's on a little bit of a slide, though, right now.
Overall, he's a top five tight end, however you want to slice it. Cam Newton's still been pretty good.
Cam Newton's been pretty disappointing, too.
Well, that's a different discussion. I mean, there are definitely Cam Newton's been disappointing, Kelvin Benjamin's been disappointing, but we're talking about players that you're going to draft on bad teams. Now,
yeah, Panthers weren't a projected bad team, so
exactly. And if the season, let's say we were to do a redraft right now, I would still want Greg Olsen on my team. I'd still want Cam Newton. I'd probably still want Kelvin Benjamin, depending on the round. So it all depends on value. But I agree. There are a lot of disappointing players in the Panthers too.
Yep. And then the only other one is kind of like the Carolina situation where you didn't think they'd be this bad, and that's the Cincinnati Bengals at 4-7-1. Eifert is now productive and now definitely startable, but you've had to hold on to him for several weeks. Most people just dropped him. Let's face it. If you have him now, it's probably because whoever actually drafted him had to let him go. You ended up picking him up. AJ Green was phenomenal before his injury, and Dalton's been completely up and down.
Yeah, I mean, like the Panthers, they've just been a disappointing team overall, and they've been hit with the injury bug recently. So the goal is to not avoid players on teams like Carolina, Cincinnati that are going to underachieve. It's to avoid the teams that are, you know, perennial bad teams like the Jaguars, like the Browns, like the Niners. Yeah,
right. And I think if you put a couple of these, I don't know if you want to call them systems or rules in place, but you know, if you don't draft someone over a specific age, knowing that the high percentage of downside, you know, high risk factor, not drafting anyone associated with these perennial bad teams with the percentage of high risk factor, you should, in theory, set yourself up pretty good.
Yep, and I would add, too, that, you know, a couple things. One is, you know, we still like David Johnson and Ezekiel going into the year, but we were a little worried that there was a little bit of risk attached to those players, you know, and the upside was great. We admitted that, and we should have, you know, I think that's something that sometimes the upside of a player like a David Johnson or Ezekiel Elliott is worth taking the risk on, because look at the season David Johnson has had. It's just ridiculous. Far and away the best fantasy player. The only player that's even close is Le'Veon Bell, and Le'Veon Bell is still, you know, I'd say a distant second to him. But the other part of that is no matter how high we put Le'Veon Bell on a pedestal, we're still underappreciating him. This guy is an absolute fantasy stud, and you know, I'd say it's either going to be him or David Johnson next year for the number one pick. But
Who are you taking?
That is.
The season ended today, and they're
I'd have to take David Johnson.
Full 16 games with Bell?
Yeah, because I would have to. I mean, David Johnson, have you seen his last 3 weeks, he's had over 30 fantasy points. And if you look at what he does in the passing game, that's where he becomes a great fantasy player to you know, just not fair, an unfair fantasy player. 9 catches on Sunday against Washington. Week before, 8 catches. Week before that, 7 catches. Then you have 7 against Carolina, 8 catches against Seattle. Seattle. So, you know, he's on pace for, you know, for probably close to 90 to 100 catches on the year.
Yeah, and, I mean, that's going to be a tough decision next year, which can be an exciting offseason to talk about. Back to your point that you made about, you know, having a little bit of looking at the downside on David Johnson and Ezekiel Elliott, not really talking or realizing the upside. You know, not that we hated them, but we looked at a lot more of their downside. And I remember listening, and I listened to a lot of, you know, business podcasts and this all kind of stuff. But as soon as you said that, it reminded me of this really popular person from, you know, venture capitalist Chris Sacca, who's a big investor. Right, he's a big investor in Twitter and Instagram and Uber. And I remember listening to his talk one time, and he was commenting on how he missed on some of these larger companies, not because he didn't maybe see the upside with them, but he focused too much on the downside. He focused too much on the negatives, and that clouded his judgment. And kind of like when you were just talking about Ezekiel Elliott and David Johnson, it kind of made me think, like, that's exactly what we did, Seth. We focused a little bit too much on the downside, and it clouded our judgment too much.
Yeah, I totally agree. And sometimes you just got to go for it with David Johnson. And we're in a league where we kid in our league got him in the second round. It's just absurd. And the only advantage I think Le'Veon Bell has over David Johnson is David Johnson only has 4 games this year. This is the insanity of David Johnson's season. He only has 4 games this year with 20 carries or more. Le'Veon Bell has played in 9 games, and 5 of the 9 games he's had over 20 carries. So Pittsburgh just runs so many plays that even though it doesn't seem like they run a lot, Le'Veon Bell still ends up with, you know, around 20 carries. So, you know, they're in a league of their own, those two. They're going to be number 1 and 2 next year, with Ezekiel Elliott probably being, you know, him and Antonio. Then the first round next year is going to be insane.
Oh, my God, yeah. I mean, that top four, to think that Antonio Brown, who's having not a bad year, is going to be consensusly not in the top 3 next year.
Think about what's going to happen. So you're going to have, let's say, just for argument's sake, you have David Johnson, number 1. Number 2, Le'Veon Bell. Number 3, Ezekiel Elliott, because, you know, people are going to be back on running backs with the success that these guys have had. And then number 4, you know, let's say Antonio Brown goes number 4. And then you have Julio and Odell Beckham. They're going to drop to 5 and 6. You're going to get Julio at pick 5, most likely. You know, and then the back end of the first round, you're going to have Melvin Gordon potentially, LeSean McCoy, AJ Green. So a stacked first round next year. A great year to have a first round pick or have a high first round pick.
And you want to know who has the most receptions at running back this year?
Melvin Gordon.
Le'Veon Bell, who missed 3 games. How crazy is that?
It's just not fair.
And the thing, too, with Le'Veon Bell, and I'm kind of forecasting out here, and I know we're kind of getting a little bit off topic, shocking, but we talk a lot about touchdown regression, and we loved Mike Evans with his touchdown regression from last year because he only had 3. It took Le'Veon Bell 5. He went straight 5 straight games without a touchdown this year before he got 3 in a row, singles.
And one thing I want to add, too, about our wall bet that we did, I think I'm going to win that Le'Veon Bell wall bet. Am I not? Now that AJ Green's out for the year?
Yeah, you might be. Yeah,
you
might.
Oh yeah, you don't bring those up when I'm going to win a wall bet. But
well,
if I was going to lose that one,
it takes an injury for you to lose.
Okay, well,
I mean, for you to win.
Okay, I'll take it any way I can get it. The one other thing that I want to add about next year's first round is DeMarco Murray might be the steal of the draft next year. He's the second rated coming into this year. He's on this week. He's on bye, so he's going to drop a little bit. Second overall running back going into this week, ahead of Ezekiel Elliott, ahead of McCoy, Bell, Melvin Gordon. DeMarco Murray is going to be someone that drops to like the 7th or 8th pick next year. So,
yeah, I might be a little scared of him next year, to be honest. But we're getting way off topic, yep.
Definitely getting ahead of ourselves. We got a ways to go till the first round next year.
But it's obviously already exciting to start talking about draft research, which is everyone's favorite time of the year, and doing the drafts next year. But We got the playoffs coming up, Seth. So later this week, first thing Friday morning, everyone is going to get another episode from us on our fantasy football playoffs preview. Why don't you give a little bit of a quick snapshot, Seth, of what that episode is going to look like and what we're going to have in that.
So much like we did with the trade deadline special earlier this year, we're going to spend a full episode just dissecting the upcoming week in fantasy as the playoffs roll around. So starting Thursday night, the playoffs kick off for most leagues. We want to talk about players you should start, players you should sit. The previous 13 weeks are in the books in the past. It's a brand new season. So we want to look at, you know, also defenses you should start for 1 week as like a streaming option. Quarterbacks that may not be the sexy play but might, you know, win you a week in the playoffs. Like Joe Flacco, for example, this last week that blew up. You know, it's a brand new season coming up. So, you know, we got a lot to talk about in the playoffs. Anything that you want to add to that, Jeff?
I mean, just kind of like you said, the last 13 weeks are behind us. And I know in one of our online championships, Seth, this past week, you know, it wasn't the playoffs, but we sat Todd Gurley and put in Spencer Ware for him in the running back spot because Todd Gurley's just not getting it done. And if you have other people, you know, someone maybe even like a Rob Kelly coming up this week, and we're going to go over some really interesting names. Yep. It's not going to sound sexy, but it's definitely turned – now it is a what have you done for me lately.
Yep, and also for those people out there that have first-round buys, and you might not, you know, play your first playoff game till week 15, right? This week doesn't matter. You're eyeing week 15. Now is the time to position yourself for week 15, where everybody else in your league is scrambling, whether it's on waivers or whatnot, to get themselves ready for this week. You can pick up players or a defense or whoever – that has a really good matchup week 15 when no one else is really paying attention to them because maybe that defense has a bad matchup this week. So that's the approach we want to take. Again, a good example is I have Buffalo's defense, not starting them this week against Oakland, obviously, or last week against Oakland, but week 15, they play Cleveland at home. So we're going to talk about different plays like that that'll help you even if you have a first-round bye this week.
Absolutely. Let's go ahead and kick us off into what we saw this past weekend and just give a little bit of recap of week 13. One of the biggest surprises to me, not just this week though, is more like the last couple weeks. I wanted to get your thoughts on this. It's the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. I mean, I haven't really listened to a lot of other sports talk, but I'm guessing it's going a little bit underneath the radar. A team in Seattle that still looks good this past weekend. Kansas City, who just went into Atlanta and won and consistently find ways to win. Tampa Bay has beat both of those teams. What do we make of Tampa Bay?
Your guess is as good as mine if they're for real or not, but those are some pretty quality wins. When you talk about it, doesn't matter. It wasn't pretty when they beat Seattle, but they beat Seattle, always a tough team to beat. They go into KC and beat KC. We know how hard it is for teams to beat KC these days. And then I think one of the most, I'd say out of that four-game stretch, I think the win in San Diego was probably the most impressive because San Diego is just one of those teams that no one ever talks about, but they're just a well-oiled machine on offense. So I think you got to look at Tampa Bay. I think they're in the driver's seat to win that division. Ever since that loss against Atlanta on Thursday night when they got blown out, they've just been, you know, really good. So, you know, their schedule coming up, I think they got New Orleans again. They got Carolina. I think Tampa Bay is in the driver's seat to win the South. I don't know what they'll do in the playoffs, but the NFC outside of Dallas is pretty wide open. And Jameis Winston's playing really good. Mike Evans is a stud. Tampa Bay's defense is playing pretty well. And, you know, the Doug Martin got injured in the game yesterday, and I think they're probably better off with Jaquizz Rodgers, who's back in action. So I think Tampa Bay is going to win the division, and where they go from there is anybody's guess.
Yeah, I think that you make a good point in terms of, I don't know if it was the most impressive win against San Diego, but the other two were at home, and you know they had to go on the road to a scrappy San Diego team, which could be, you know, a letdown game after coming off a big victory against at home against Seattle. They didn't. They didn't let that be a trap game. They went on the road and they won. And now they're tied for the division lead. So I think, I don't know, they're obviously trending up, kind of like what we were I was mentioning earlier. My team was consistently good all year in fantasy. I didn't necessarily end the best in some of these leagues, whereas some other teams caught hot, you know, got really hot right at the end. So, you know, how much do you put on that?
You, shocking that you'd compare your fantasy team to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
Well,
Tampa Bay is your 1C team, right?
My 1C,
one C?
Yes.
1C.
1C.
I bet you're wishing you kept them as your 1B team. They were your 1B team for a while, and then you just you jumped on the Philly bandwagon, and you looked and...
Don't remind me. Tampa Bay has been my 1B team for...
No,
Jesus.
You can't say that. No, you can't say that.
They
no,
used
not,
to be.
Not after, nope.
They used to be. And then Carson Wentz came along, and he just enamored me. I mean, he took my heart, and I'm just, you know, I don't know. He can do no wrong in my eyes.
Clearly.
I should be able to give no advice on the Philadelphia Eagles, because it's not objective at all.
Yeah, I mean, what surprised me most from the games yesterday was Miami Dolphins losing 38-6 to Baltimore. Now, I texted you before the games and I said, you know, I'm thinking about doing a teaser. What do you think about Miami getting 13.5? Pretty safe bet, right? I loved it because, let's face it, Miami was coming off of a 6-game winning streak where they beat Pittsburgh, they beat Buffalo, they beat San Diego. 6 games in a row, and they look like a team that was really on the upswing under Adam Gase. Like they've turned a corner and, you know, heading towards, you know, legitimacy of some sort. And then they go into Baltimore. And it doesn't surprise me that they lost because Baltimore's a tough team, right? They're a good team this year. They got a good defense. But the way they lost, 38-6, really, really shocked me because I don't know. I just didn't think they would lose that badly.
Yeah,
I don't know what else to say.
The sixth part, them scoring 6 points was not overly surprising to me just because I just can't buy into their offense and buy into Ryan Tannehill. But them allowing 38 points to a Baltimore offense that hasn't been able to score points virtually against anyone was definitely surprising.
Yeah, it was.
In terms of these conferences here, Seth, you know, Tampa Bay now trying to make a run at their division. You had it where last week, I believe, Denver was actually out of the playoffs, and Miami was in after Denver lost against Kansas City last week, and obviously that has changed. But if we look at New England, now I would have to easily say the biggest threat, let's just look at the top one teams in each conference, that's New England and Dallas. Besides Oakland, or do you think someone else other than Oakland is the biggest threat to New England? KC, Denver, Baltimore, Pittsburgh?
Well, to me, and I'm probably the minority, I think the two biggest teams, as a New England fan, which you and I both are, the two teams that scare me the most, neither of them are Oakland or Denver or KC. And now, if the game was in Denver, that'd be an exception because we can't win games in Denver. But
no,
the two teams that scare me the most as a New England Patriots fan are Pittsburgh and Baltimore, and I'll tell you why. Well, we know Baltimore always plays New England tough,
yep.
And they have all the pieces on offense right now to scare the living daylights out of me. They have Kenneth Dixon now, who can catch passes out of the backfield. They have Mike Wallace and Breshad Perriman, who can stretch the field. They have Dennis Pitta, who is, I think, leads the team in targets going into this week's games, who had a big game on Sunday, by the way. And they have Steve Smith, who you know New England's not going to be able to cover him. So Baltimore's – and they have a great defense now. Baltimore's one of those teams that is great at moving the chains on third down. I just don't think New England's defense would be able to get off the field against Baltimore. And then Pittsburgh
– Oh, let me comment on Baltimore while you're on it, because I completely agree. I would say that I would be more scared of playing Baltimore in the playoffs than Oakland just from prior history. I mean, you don't need anything else to know that John Harbaugh has the confidence. Joe Flacco has a confidence. And not only, you know, would we have trouble of definitely going into Baltimore, but, you know, we're not going to sleep well knowing that Baltimore's even going into New England. And as you mentioned, they can convert on third downs. We actually, the way we play defense allows Baltimore to play offense. That's part of the problem. They want to dink and dunk. They want to do all these play actions. They don't want to move fast at all on offense. We don't want an offense to move fast. We play prevent defense. We are number three in terms of scoring defense going into this past weekend. We'll give up all the yardage that the offense is willing to take, but we won't allow points. That's exactly what Baltimore wants, and that's why they've been able to beat us in the past. And on top of that, even when they don't have a superstar defense, they know how to play Tom Brady and the Patriots. And this year, they have a very legitimate defense. So for all those reasons, I think you have to be concerned as a New England fan, and you don't have your number one weapon in offense besides Tom Brady and Rob Gronkowski.
Yeah, and Baltimore, just like Pittsburgh, this is the best defense they've had in the past 5 years. This is Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh has the best defense right now they've had in the past five, six, probably in the past 10 years, ever since Troy Polamalu, James Harrison, and all of them were together, where in the last couple of years, everyone said, oh, Pittsburgh is going to be the biggest threat to New England because their offense. And you and I talked about it, and we were like, I don't know, because their defense is just so bad. But we can't say that about Pittsburgh anymore. Pittsburgh has a respectable defense to go with that offense. And Big Ben, just like Flacco, is not going to be scared coming into Foxborough, and you know they're going to put up points. And without Gronk, I'm worried about a team that has a solid defense and a dynamic offense, because if New England is being asked to put up 30 points to win a playoff game, it's definitely doable, but I'm not as confident that New England can do that without Gronk.
Yeah, I think I would agree with Pittsburgh over Oakland, just because Jack Del Rio, I'm still not buying into him. They're playing really well, their offensive line, you know, but here's one thing I will say is I'm not really worried about Pittsburgh's defense. I think New England can still move the ball on them. Brady always has. They just know Pittsburgh's defense for some reason. But their offense, I mean,
scary.
It's scary.
Le'Veon Bell is the scary part. I mean, Antonio Brown, Malcolm Butler, I think can slow Antonio Brown down just enough, but we have no answer for Le'Veon Bell, especially not without Jamie Collins to cover, to help out in the passing game.
It's a good thing we got 2018 third rounder for him.
Yeah, I mean, good value. Hey, at least we got those. We got, you know, Rob Ninkovich and Chris Long, who, you know, are really good at getting to the quarterback and just making plays. They're pretty fast and athletic. So
how about Shea McClellan? I mean, Shea McClellan's the type of person that any team, including Jacksonville or Chicago, where he came from, or Cleveland, when he's starting for the team, says, I can't believe this person's starting in the NFL. And now as a New England Patriot fan, we have to say that to ourselves. That Shea McClellan is a starting linebacker for us.
It's just so pathetic. So pathetic. And I agree with you on Oakland. I don't see Oakland. If the game's in New England, I don't see Oakland coming across the country with that defense and Jack Del Rio as the coach and beating New England. If the game's in Oakland, I don't know. I think it's – I wouldn't say it's a toss-up. I think New England's a favorite. But, you know, I'm pretty worried at that point, right? I mean, Oakland can put up points with the best of them.
Right.
Now, KC, to me – last thing on KC, I'm not really worried about them because they just – they feast on bad teams. During the regular season, they can win based on other teams just being really bad. And when you get in the playoffs, you're playing good teams. Teams aren't going to hand you the game like we saw Atlanta do.
Yeah,
so.
And they would have to come to New England. So not really worried there. With the NFC, the Cowboys are head and shoulders much more so than anyone in the AFC, of course. But let me ask you this. Is Jason Garrett a good coach?
There's so many bad coaches in the NFL that I think he's in the top half for sure.
Okay, but is he a good coach? I didn't ask you.
Yes, he's a good coach. He's a slightly above average coach.
Well, which one is it? Slightly above average or good?
Both. Good is slightly above average.
No, slightly above average is in between average and good.
Okay, well, he's a good coach. He's a good coach. I mean, he's making it way more confusing than it needs to be. This is the way I look at it. He's not Bill Belichick. He's not Pete Carroll. He's not John Harbaugh. I'd say outside of those three, I mean, what other coaches would you say are really good? Bruce, we would have thought Bruce Arians was, right?
I still like Bruce Arians. I mean, okay, so, I'm not going to let this one season and the way Carson Palmer is playing necessarily change my opinion too much. I would take Bruce Arians over Jason Garrett.
And I really don't want to put Mike Tomlin in this category because it seems like they really win in spite of him most of the time. But I'll put Mike Tomlin in there just to be nice.
Well, I think you could put Jason Garrett in the Mike Tomlin category of but good, but not the other people you just mentioned. And maybe that's what you were saying.
Yeah, because when you look at it, okay, we have Jim Caldwell, you have John Fox, you have Mike McCarthy, you know, you have Dan Quinn, Ron Rivera, like all these really below average coaches. I think Jason Garrett's better than all of them. One of the coach that I think has done a good job.
I don't think Ron Rivera is below average.
Well, aside from one season where they went to the Super Bowl, what has he really accomplished?
Well, he lost Josh Norman for one, and he's got Cam Newton that I don't know. I mean, I'm not the same in love with person Cam Newton as others might be. Not even last year.
You're not the same in love with person. You talk for once. Mike Zimmer is the other coach that I'm going to put in that category because I still think what Mike Zimmer has done with the level of talent that he has in Minnesota is pretty impressive. You got to say it's pretty impressive. They lose Adrian Peterson. They have Matt Asiata, Jerick McKinnon as their running backs. They have Adam Thielen, who they just, you know, he's came from out of nowhere. Outside of Stephon Diggs, who's injured here and there, they really don't have any other weapons in the passing game. You have Sam Bradford, who had to come over in short notice, learn a new playbook, and he's Sam Bradford. Their offensive line has been one of the worst offensive lines in the NFL in terms of pass protection. So, yeah, they have a good defense, but I think Mike Zimmer has done a really good job.
I totally agree, and I guess that kind of brings me to the point of sometimes it's a little deceiving, you know, and we're harsh, me and you especially, I think, on some of these coaches that just don't have the talent. I've never really liked Tony Romo, yet I never gave Jason Garrett a pass for it. You know, I recognize not liking Tony Romo, but I never gave him a pass for it. And now all of a sudden, these two rookies are allowing him and this team to be 11-1. Their only loss is when they were both rookies in game one. I mean, it's kind of ridiculous. And I think he's doing a good job coaching too.
Yeah, because Dallas doesn't make a lot of mistakes. And you can give a lot of credit to Dak Prescott, rightfully so. But I give a lot of credit to Jason Garrett too for the game plans that he implements week in and week out.
Yep.
And for just, you know, putting these guys in position to do what they've been doing. I mean, Dallas has the best record in the NFL for a reason. And, you know, especially the season started out with Ezekiel Elliott had a rough start to the season. Dak Prescott was a game manager for the first 3 weeks. So, and they've had a lot of injuries on defense. You know, especially in their secondary with losing Maurice Claiborne and no Barry Church for most of the year. So, I think we can finally say Jason Garrett is coaching his butt off. He's having a good year.
And what the Cowboys are doing on defense should be eye-opening for any team that is allowing more points than the Dallas Cowboys defensively. The Dallas Cowboys doesn't have really many people at all on defense to speak of, and no superstars. So, you know, if there's another, there's plenty of teams that are allowing more points specifically than the Dallas Cowboys, they need to do something defensively because they're doing, the other teams are just do a poor job and poor effort. It's like the New Orleans Saints year in and year out. Is it Sean Payton we should be blaming, or is it just a defensive coordinator? Because at this point, I am totally on board with blaming Sean Payton.
Yeah. At some point, and they got rid of Rob Ryan, and they blamed the entire defense on him. So, yeah, we get it. He's a really bad defensive coordinator. At some point, the buck's got to stop with you, Sean Payton, right? At some point, he needs to be held accountable for their defense never improving over his tenure. And they can't just outscore teams anymore, because when they're losing games at home to Detroit, that's when you've turned a corner for the worst. They used to get by just barely because they would blow teams out at home and they'd be, you know, a really good home team that could score a lot of points. But when you have a terrible defense and you're only putting up 13 points at home against the Detroit Lions, you have a real big issue.
Absolutely, and it's part of, or it's not part, but it's Sean Payton's problem that he's the one who hired Rob Ryan in the first place. So he has to take that responsibility. And back to the Dallas Cowboys. Okay, so they're head and shoulders above everyone else. Who is in the running to potentially knock them off and represent the NFC? Seattle, Atlanta, kind of Giants. I mean, who would you take?
Definitely not Atlanta. Atlanta, I just don't even think belongs in discussion anymore. They don't have the coaching. Their defense is just incredibly bad. And Matt Ryan, you know, just when you think Matt Ryan is turned the corner, he's having an MVP year, he makes the crucial mistake of, you know, throwing a pick six to the house on a 2-point conversion play, which really wasn't a bad coaching decision by Dan Quinn. You know, that's on Matt Ryan. You cannot make that throw in that situation. I don't think Atlanta. I would say if I had to pick one, I think Seattle, even with the loss of Earl Thomas, I think Seattle is the biggest threat to Dallas. And then the one wild card team that I would put out there is the Giants, just because the Giants' defense has been one of the most underrated defenses all year. And they have the off. They have Eli Manning, who's a big game quarterback. They got the weapons with, you know, Beckham and Sterling Shepard, that they can just get anything out of that running game. I think they would have a chance. And they're an in-division foe, right? They're a team that's very familiar with the Cowboys. You'd think those games are going to be closer. So I would say the Giants would be kind of on the outside looking in as kind of a wild card team in that situation. But I think it's a two-horse race in the NFC.
Seattle and Dallas?
Yep, Seattle and Dallas. Yep.
What do you think the impact of losing Earl Thomas is going to be?
I don't know. If there's any team that can overcome it, it's Seattle. They, you know, I was thinking about it, you know, losing like Earl Thomas, that's a huge loss. But when you think of all the players they still have on defense, they still have Bobby Wagner, still have Richard Sherman, still have Cam Chancellor back now. They have Michael Bennett back now. They have so many Pro Bowl players in that defense still that I think they'll be just fine. I think if the NFC was more competitive, it'd be a bigger issue. I think they, especially if they have home field advantage, I think home field advantage is going to be the key for Seattle. And, you know, they're going to need Dallas to lose in order to catch them, which is going to be a tall order.
It's going to be really tough for any team to beat Dallas. And I think in 2 weeks, we're about to see Dallas on back-to-back Sunday night games. So I'm glad to see that the NFL and NBC didn't try and shy away from putting the same team on back-to-back nights, because Dallas is much watched TV right now, which I never thought I would say. But in a couple of weeks, they're going to be playing the Giants, and I believe they're playing. I'm trying to remember. Was the first game in Dallas, Seth? Do you remember when they played the Giants in Dallas?
Giants play in Dallas. Yep, and beat them.
Right. So now it's going to be in New York. I mean, this will be the tell-all for the Giants in a couple of weeks on Sunday night at home if they've got a shot in the NFC, if they can beat Dallas that Sunday night.
I agree. And Detroit, we got to mention Detroit. You know, they're probably one of the best sneaky good teams in the NFL. They're now 8-4. You know, after beating New Orleans, and no running game. It's kind of crazy to think that Detroit is 8-4 with as little production they've got out of the running game this year. And in the last few years, we've been saying this about Detroit. They can't run. They just can't do it. But Jim Bob Cooter, ever since he took over as the offensive coordinator for Detroit, they're a completely new team. Matt Stafford is quietly having a really good season. Golden Tate is reemerged as a really good fantasy wide receiver. And, you know, they get production from Theo Riddick. You got Eric Ebron, who's pretty good now. He's healthy. So I think Detroit, and their defense has been solid too. So I think Detroit is a team that you got to keep an eye on. They've had four losses this year by a combined total of 18 points. So basically every single time they lose, they're in it to the very end, you know, basically by one possession. So Detroit is someone that's going to be there. And I think if Detroit played Dallas in the playoffs, you know, I think they could keep it close, because they always do. But I think they're a team you got to keep your eye on as well. They're probably going to win that division.
They're going to win a division. They're going to get a home game. And my guess is it probably one and done, personally.
Oh, so it depends on who they play. So let's say they played Tampa. Tampa would have to win the division. So let's say they play...
Well, Tampa's winning the wild card right now, 7-5.
True, but I'm anticipating Atlanta drops out. And okay, we'll say Tampa Bay for argument's sake. Tampa Bay in Detroit. I'm taking Detroit.
I'm taking Tampa Bay.
And now,
maybe when this happens, maybe we could put, you know, a little small friendly wager on it.
Yeah, that sounds good. We could do that. And the Giants, if the Giants win the wild card and go to Detroit, I would take the Giants. But that would be, you know.
Yeah.
We'll see.
All right. Well, that's going to wrap up our episode. We're going to have a fantasy football playoff preview out this Friday. Make sure everyone tunes in for that. And thanks for listening to the NFL Talking Heads.
Thanks so much for listening to this episode of the NFL Talking Heads Fantasy Football Podcast Show. Try saying that three times fast. With your hosts, Jeff Carrier and Seth Lowe. We'll catch you next time.